Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Welcome to My World. Tonight we are going to be discussing something that I'm really excited about and that I've actually heard a lot of great feedback about already before the show is even done. We're going to be starting a new sort of segment, a new series of episodes, because we do talk about a lot of different topics, a lot of different subjects here. We are actually introducing a brand new set of episodes, and we're going to be calling them Best in Show. Haha, play on words, funny. It's actually, makes sense. Hey, it makes sense, okay? Because we're talking about some of the best TV shows that also, well, show very well. They're good shows, they're quality entertainment, and they also make you think. They're well acted, they're very well written, and they're well produced. And we would like to speak about these shows. We've got kind of a long, but if I do say so myself, a well-curated list of great TV shows. And the ones that we're going to address tonight, now this is by no means our complete list, so please don't feel that you've been left out if we haven't included your favorite show simply on the three that we're going to talk about tonight. As I said, we've got a list of about 10, 12 shows right now, and of course it'll be updated throughout the year as the different seasonal shows come and go. I'm sure we'll be talking about Game of Thrones here in the springtime, but right now we're talking about three particular shows on our ever-changing list. And as I said, even if I do say so myself, we've got a pretty tightly curated list here. So the shows we're going to be discussing tonight are three. They are Teen Wolf, Jessica Jones, and The 100. Now, I want to let you guys know that I am broadcasting from my home tonight, and apparently I've got some loud neighbors, and I do apologize for that. We have quite decent soundproofing here. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. Maybe they're bowling. Maybe they're dragging chains across the floor. I don't know. Maybe they are competing in an Olympic skiing event. Maybe they're actually up there ice skating. We don't know. Like, they could be doing anything, honestly. We don't know. They could be actually sandpapering the floor. But I do apologize for the noise, and I want to let you guys know that I'm fully dedicated to you tonight. I'm not doing something else that's causing noise to be made. That's my neighbors, and I hope they'll stop soon. I do. So I apologize for that. Now, without further ado, let's get to the show. Let's get to episode one of Best in Show. As I said, tonight we're going to be talking Teen Wolf, Jessica Jones, and The 100. Now, there's been a lot of excitement about Teen Wolf, and actually Jessica Jones as well. So I'm hoping that some of you will take the opportunity to call in at 929-477-2694 and either listen in or join us for the discussion. Because, as I said, there's been a lot of excitement. Those are both shows, Jessica Jones and Teen Wolf, that are kind of niche audiences, maybe a little bit of a cult audience. And I'd be happy to hear what your thoughts are on the matter and how you feel about your shows. I know that especially cult shows can sort of procure a very dedicated audience base. And I'm certainly one among many. I'm certainly part of that audience base for all three of these shows. Now, I want to let you all know that there may be some slight spoilers. It shouldn't be anything that would possibly ruin your show watching experience. But if you've not seen any of these shows at all, I want you to keep in mind that, you know, we can't possibly avoid giving any spoilers whatsoever. So there may be a couple of gentle spoilers here. So spoiler alert, just want to let you know up front. And let's go ahead and get started. We're going to try to keep the spoilers minimal. And as I said, they're not going to be anything that are going to really stop you from watching this show. It's just that we have to give context and we have to do a decent job of explaining what it is we're talking about when we're giving examples of why these shows are so good. We can't just say they're great and then move on. I mean, sure, that wouldn't be giving you any spoilers, but it wouldn't be giving you any interesting information either. So please do feel free to call 929-477-2694 and discuss. Now, you can call in at any time, but if we could try to keep it relevant to the specific show that we're addressing at each part, during each part of the segment. We're going to have three parts of this entire broadcast tonight. It's going to be divided up into three. We're going to start with the 100, then we will move to Jessica Jones, and then finally we will save the most exciting piece of Blog Talk Radio tonight for last, which is Teen Wolf. So if you'd like to talk about the 100, please feel free to call in now. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to read you my program notes, and I'm going to discuss with you why I feel and why some of the people I talked to recently and polled recently feel that the 100 is a great show. A good friend of mine and I watch the show religiously, and we are certainly not, you know, a teen audience or an audience that watches mainly, you know, CW shows. We're really not the target audience. So I think it speaks to the greatness of the show that it is able to pull us in. So at this moment, I do feel, and I'll just give you this one caveat before I tell you how great it is. I do feel that at this moment in time, as of right now, as of today, the 100 is suffering just slightly from what I call what now syndrome, because they have really plowed through a lot of just fantastic plot points. They have plowed through a lot of really, really great stories so far. So I do feel that people may be saying, okay, great, this has been a great show up until this point, but guys, hey, what now? Still, as I said, it is a great, great show. Last season on the 100, and again, trying not to do too many spoilers, trying not to insert too many spoilers, but last season was the big fight between the Grounders and the inhabitants of the space station, which had been building for the past several seasons. At the end of season one, there was a skirmish, I guess you would say. If you'd only watched season one, you might have thought, oh my gosh, this is the all-encompassing battle. But no, it was a skirmish, or perhaps a battle in a larger war. But with season two, the way that season two ended, it really was the war, or at least the major battle. And it was just epic. It was just huge. It was absolutely awesome. And the whole show had really been building toward this point. So that is why I say that right now the show is suffering a little bit from the what now syndrome. It's not unexpected. And it certainly doesn't mean that the show isn't going to come up with something that is even bigger and better and more awesome and, you know, heart-pounding and show-stopping. Hopefully not literally show-stopping. So let's move on to why should you watch? Why watch? Well, for starters, this is not your typical CW show. There is a great mix of characters. There are a great mix of characters. For example, and as I said, without getting into spoilers too deeply, there are, within the 100, differently abled characters, characters of different races, creeds, cultures, backgrounds, which is saying something since we're referencing a show, guys, where a major plot point happens to be breeding and survival and basically having had all of those pesky human differences bred out of the surviving humans after the apocalypse. And the apocalypse, for those of you who haven't watched the show yet, is basically a nuclear war. And the survivors have been living in a space station called the Ark for 90-plus years. I believe they specifically said 91 years at the outset, at the very beginning of the show. So it is, of course, understandable that some of these human differences that make our culture so diverse here on Earth have been brought out. But still, even so, they do a great job of representing all different kinds of people. It runs the gamut. It's absolutely wonderful. Characters that exist across the gender spectrum are given a lot of visibility here. Characters that exist across the spectrum of sexual preferences are given a lot of storyline and a lot of real personality and depth. And, you know, in a lot of shows nowadays, there will be a token transgendered person, a token, God, even black person or Latino person or gay person. And in this show, it's more than that. There are no token characters that exist just to be sitting there just to, I don't know, further the plot or make it look as if the showrunners aren't bigoted or biased. The characters are rich and diverse. As I said, lots of different sexual preferences, lots of different genders, lots of different ways of identifying, and nobody's pigeonholed, which is awesome. So rare and awesome. There are characters of different ages, which I really have to say in a CW show is kind of a huge deal. There are characters from different countries. Stay with me. Yes, there are characters whose relatives have come from different countries that have lived on the Ark, on the space station, but the real rich, diverse background comes into play when we meet all of the people that still live on Earth. We've got the grounders. Basically, we've got people that worship or live near water. We've got the people that worship the earth. We've got people that live in the desert. I mean, this is like a Star Wars type of universe building situation. We've got different classes. We've got the wealthy class that lives out in the City of the Light. We've got kind of the native, you know, class very close to the earth that we call the grounders. I mean, this is just so diverse. It's absolutely fantastic. I mean, you could never want for opportunities for dialogue and writing and plot points and motivations of the different groups and of the different particular characters themselves. And none of the real groups of people that exist in this universe are existent on their own. They're not existing just by themselves. They all have to interact in some way, be it good, bad, neither. They all have to interact. Nobody exists as an island. No group of people exists as an island, which is pretty awesome. And it creates some really interesting plot points. Very, very interesting plot, very interesting dialogue. And it mirrors, obviously, real life as well. There are characters, obviously, with unique ideas of how best for the humans to survive that, you know, aren't either totally good or totally evil. Nobody's wearing white hats. Nobody's wearing black hats. Morality exists on a spectrum here. And if you have seen the show, if you'll look at some of the choices, for instance, that Clark has had to make. Look at the choices Jaha has made. Look at the choices Bellamy has made. Look at the choices, well, both he and his sister have made. Both tough choices. Look at the choices Murphy has made. Murphy is a really shining example of a character that sort of exists somewhere between good and bad. And sometimes he's, you know, on one extreme of the spectrum, and other times he's on a totally different extreme, which is pretty cool. And it's very interesting. As I said, it makes for some really great plot points and really just helps the plot to unfold in really new and unexpected ways. I also like that the writing is very good on the show. The dialogue and the plot advancement are such that they'd certainly, nobody running the show and nobody acting within the show is assuming that the audience is a bunch of dummies. Nobody's assuming that. Nobody thinks that we're a bunch of idiots who can't tell, you know, a Deus Ex Machina from an actual well-conceived storyline or a well-conceived plot point. I mean, nobody thinks that we're dumb enough that we're not going to know what happens next if they just keep playing out the same tropes and the same situations over and over. So they do really change things up and make things organic and genuine. And I think it's definitely a combination of, you know, the producers, the directors, the actors, the writers, and it works so well. It's absolutely wonderful, really. The relationships between the characters, too, are great, whether they be love relationships, sexual relationships, friendships. The relationships are never easy. Excuse me. The relationships are never easy. No one lives completely happily ever after, which makes the moments when something beautiful does happen all the more poignant. And nobody's living out, as I said, some, you know, pre-existing trope, some silly idea that has been expressed a million times in other shows and other movies and other books before. These are all, it feels new. It feels like all the relationships are new. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know who's going to stay with whom, who's going to break up with whom. And it's not a, you know, salty, like, teen romantic soap opera sloppy kissy-kissy drama. It really isn't. It's very adult. It's very unique. It's very slick. It's just, the feel of it is just awesome. A lot of people, when the show first came out, criticized it, saying, oh, it's just, we're playing off of the success of The Hunger Games. It's about sending a group of teenage prisoners down to a hostile surface of a hostile planet and watching them kill each other off. No, absolutely not. That is not what the premise of the show is. That's not what happens on the show. If you haven't seen the show and you're listening to people who are still saying this, tune it out. That's not at all what happens. That's not what the show is about at all. I cannot stress that enough. Of course, the acting is quite good. I mean, really quite good. It is an ensemble show. The acting is actually, I would say, fantastic. I mean, there were some moments at the very beginning when I really liked Bellamy's character, but I kind of felt like Bob Morley was struggling a little bit with, you know, maybe finding his motivation, finding, you know, what the character was thinking and feeling when he would deliver certain lines, do certain things. I mean, you could see like an emotional, just a deep emotion in his face, in his movements, but it wasn't quite coming out in his voice. It wasn't quite being expressed. And now, I mean, it's almost like it's a different actor playing the role. Bob Morley has really grown into this role. And I am actually, I have to say, I really do eat my words. I'm eating my words right now. I was telling people what a crappy actor he was at the beginning of the show, and now I think he is really part of the heart and soul of the show. So there you go. I was wrong. You heard it here first. Also, no one is off limits, and this is something I always liked about Game of Thrones, about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, about Angel. No one is off limits as far as who will survive and who won't. Suffice it to say that people of all ages, all backgrounds, all ability levels, all genders, all sexual preferences, et cetera, have been killed off. All sorts of people have been killed off. And although not every death is predictable, the deaths that do take place are absolutely tragic, and they reflect a real-world quality of sadness, and I think of loss and of waste, and just without the show becoming bogged down by an aura of depression and tragedy and sadness. And some of the deaths are obviously epic. The actor gets an epic farewell, and then others are like, you didn't see it coming, and it's like, oh my God, that just, holy God, that just happened. And it leaves you reeling. And so I think that's a sign of a really smart set of showrunners that they know how to change it up like that and just gut punch you when you're least expecting it, but then pull it in and be sweet and kind and save the right character later on. So it's not so much like Game of Thrones where they might be, dare I say, indiscriminately killing characters, but they certainly do use the deaths wisely, and they use the characters that they save from death very wisely and very sparingly throughout the story, which is awesome. I absolutely love that. It just adds to the drama of the show. As I said, the storylines are nearly always upbeat. They're always, always poignant. The writing is definitely top-notch. The twists and turns that happen throughout the character relationships are absolutely fantastic. Oftentimes you don't see them coming, and when you do, you feel like you're being rewarded for being a good fan, but not in an overt, you know, silly way. Gosh, I mean, there are just so many reasons to love this show. And right now we're talking about the 100. We will be moving on to Teen Wolf soon enough. And, of course, we'll be talking about Jessica Jones as well. But at this moment, we are talking about the 100. So I did mention that there are a lot of twists and turns that happen throughout the relationships. I mentioned that the plot moves at a really good pace, and although in hindsight, a lot of what, not all, but a lot of what happens seems inevitable in hindsight, I defy anyone watching for the first time to tell me what's going to happen next on the 100, which reaffirms my opinion that, well, the writing is top-notch, which leads me to my next point. New TV tropes are being invented as we go on the 100. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a good thing. We have pretty much worn out our list of popular TV tropes. We need some new ones, okay? That's all I'm saying. So new TV tropes are being invented as we go along. We're breaking new ground, and we're treading new territory. Don't worry, haters. I'm sure they'll all be tired and used up in 20 years or so, just like the ones that are hanging around now, all stinky and wasted, are today. I mean, really, there are some really stinky TV tropes that we still utilize in so many shows. It's ridiculous. I mean, the ditzy best friend who is clueless to the guy that she's sitting next to being in love with her. The nice guy who never finishes first, you know, the computer nerd who has a heart of gold but everybody overlooks. Like, these have been done to death. Thankfully, the 100 is not reusing these stinky, icky, smelly, gross TV tropes. They are inventing new ones as they go. They're breaking new ground. I think it's really, really exciting and awesome. I mean, there's no recycling of the old tired tropes and the old tired themes, and no regurgitating of their own plot points or of any other show or other movie's plot points. As I said, a lot of people, when the show first started, were saying, oh, it's just a, you know, low-budget TV version of The Hunger Games. Yeah, absolutely not. People could not have been more wrong about that. Also, in the 100, the hero doesn't always get the girl or the guy, nor do half the men who want a certain woman, or women who want a certain man, or women who want a certain woman. As I said, lots of different genders and sexual preferences here. It's really wonderful. And that's kind of refreshing. I think it adds to the unpredictability factor that just makes this show so irresistibly awesome. No character is ever exempt from pain and suffering. Again, something we learned from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, as I think we learned a lot from that show. I think that's a good part of the reason why so many good, even great TV shows exist today, because of Buffy. So no character is exempt from pain and suffering. There really hasn't been another ensemble show on TV that's taken on the diverse storylines that the 100 has either. And it's got a list of really respectable actors that are, as I mentioned earlier, quite good. Obviously, the younger people are great. I know Devin Bostick, I believe his name is. I hope I didn't just butcher this poor guy's name. He is a great actor, a great younger actor. So really, so are all of the younger kids in the ensemble cast. But we've got some really great older actors, too. Adult actors, I should say. They're not older. But Isaiah Washington, for one. Clark's mom. And unfortunately, I do apologize. Her name escapes me. The actress's name escapes me right now. But we've got her. We've got Isaiah Washington. We have some really, really great actors. I'm blown away. We have a lot of actors from Battlestar Galactica, which is not a bad thing at all. I mean, that was a great show. That is a show that I think needs to be added to our list next time we do a Best in Show episode, because it's absolutely excellent. But The 100 has used a lot of actors from BSG, and I think that it's all the better for it, really. I do. I'm so sorry. I'm absolutely forgetting the name of the actor that plays the sort of nemesis, I guess you would say, at the beginning of the show to Chancellor Jaha. I am so sorry I didn't write this down. I watch the show all the time. I see his name. I believe his first name is Ian. He's a wonderful actor, though, and I really feel like we're lucky to have him in this show. Also, Alessandro Giuliani, I believe his name is, from Battlestar Galactica, is with us in The 100, and that's an exciting thing, because I really enjoyed his performance in Battlestar Galactica. We have some really great actors, so check it out. Check out The 100. It's absolutely fantastic. It's got a solid storyline, a great ensemble cast, and as I said, it's sort of breaking new ground wherever it goes. It's absolutely amazing. And I do like that the characters' motivations, they're just who they are. It's never set. It's not that they're drifting around, blowing in the wind, totally untethered, but they're not so set in their ways that they become predictable, certainly not. And I don't want to give too much away. I don't want to put too many spoilers out there. But let's just say, look at Clark, okay? She's changed quite a lot since the story first began. Her particularly, I mean, her transformation has been just amazing. So those are probably not all of the reasons that The 100 is great and that you absolutely need to watch it, but it certainly is a large portion of great reasons why you need to set your DVR and watch The 100. It is on Wednesday nights, depending on your local time zone. I'm going to leave that up to you to look it up, but it is on Wednesday nights, I believe, and you will not be sorry if you watch it. If you have not watched any of it at all yet, I do suggest that you go onto Netflix, which has seasons 1 and 2 available, and just watch those. Don't start right on season 3. Because there is so much ground to cover, you may be a little confused, and it may not make sense to you. So do start on season 1. Netflix is about all caught up on all available episodes of The 100. And if you're missing any episodes from this season, you can check Hulu up for that, because Hulu has the new episodes from this season. Then, of course, set your DVR or just simply sit and watch the old-fashioned way when the show is on. Just, you know, sit in front of your TV, turn it on, and, like, watch. I know. Genius idea. Like, who would ever think of doing that? But I think it would be worth your time. So moving on to our next show. And I almost wish that we had done Doctor Who now before we did Jessica Jones, because it was a spectacular David Tennant. But we're going to say that that's going to be saved for later, maybe saved the best for last or something like that. Because Doctor Who is probably going to take an episode in itself, let's be honest. So we're moving on to Jessica Jones, and then we'll move on to our final show of the night, Teen Wolf. Now, Jessica Jones, this is, again, one of the finest TV shows on right now, and it airs on Netflix. Where do I even start? Of course, I think with the way that I just introduced this, I need to start with the indomitable and inherently versatile David Tennant. This guy plays the most heinous and lovable, yes, you heard me right, lovable villain I have ever seen. Now, we all love Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We all love Mark Pellegrino as Lucifer in Supernatural. Frankly, Mark Pellegrino is simultaneously lighthearted and devilish. Yes, I just went there. Performance as Satan was really one of the only reasons I ever watched Supernatural. And, of course, we loved Angelus from Buffy. Not Angel, guys. Okay, Angelus. Real Buffy fans will know the difference. From Buffy the Vampire Slayer, who I could swear sometimes when I'm watching Tennant's performance here that he's borrowing from. I really feel like Tennant may be borrowing at points from Angelus. It's so eerily similar. But I think that David Tennant and David Boreanaz are borrowing from each other here because they're very similar and they're both very good. Now, Kilgrave is the name of David Tennant's character in Jessica Jones, is sort of the aptly named villain whom David Tennant plays. And man, it is a powerhouse performance and a powerhouse production. This performance and this show, I think, are both safe to say that they're in a league of their own, for sure. As this dark superhero / supervillain, Kilgrave, Tennant quite literally murders, rapes, and maims his way into the viewer's heart. And yes, you heard me right. He murders, rapes, and maims his way into your heart. Kind of hard to do, but he does it. Tennant's Kilgrave, and when I say Tennant's Kilgrave, I'm just drawing a distinction between the Kilgrave that is mapped out in the comics, for those of you who have read the comics, the Alias comics, and the Kilgrave that Tennant plays. But Tennant's Kilgrave is a quirky, kind of a self-righteous, self-serving villain. He is obsessed with making the show's namesake character, Jessica Jones, of course, a superhero in her own right, his, and making her pay dearly for leaving him once before. David Tennant is, of course, known to every Whovian the world over as the 10th and best incarnation of the Doctor on the British TV show Doctor Who. In addition to being a Doctor Who alum, Tennant is also a graduate of the Harry Potter School of Acting. Surprise, surprise, right? He's a big-name British actor. He's in good company, right? There have been a lot of great British actors in the Harry Potter franchise. A lot of really great British actors from last century and this have starred in that franchise, so we can't fault him for that. He is also well-known for his turn in Broadchurch, which is actually a popular British whodunit, and quite a decent example of a well-acted show with an ensemble cast. Now, let's talk a little bit more about Kilgrave, and I think in the process we can discuss the show's plot as well, just a little bit. Can you tell that I think Kilgrave is really one of the very best parts of this show? Kilgrave is a man tortured by the image of what he could have been. Even as a child, his parents instilled an almost obsessive sense of underachievement and not being good enough within him. Now, that would be tough on any child, even in the best of conditions, but add it to Kilgrave's innate ability to control anyone he wants in any way he wants via his superhero power of compulsion, and you've got a recipe for psychopathy. Kilgrave's powers are at once understated and overwhelming to the point of inevitability. Even the toughest of men and women, when presented with Kilgrave, are easily broken. As a child, Kilgrave looked up to his idol, a British footballer whom he was compared to, and very unfairly, I might add, at a young age by his well-meaning but ultimately lacking parents. In an effort to subdue his baser impulses and propel him toward a nobler future, which obviously didn't take. Fast forward 30 or so years and enter Jessica Jones. A seemingly sweet girl, a little younger than him, with not much ambition and an ambiguous destiny, who has superpowers of her own but seems loath to use them, at least in any constructive way. Kilgrave soon meets and becomes enamored of this young, blossoming superhero and decides to take her under his wing. Unfortunately, because of a mixture of the various internal and external circumstances that I just described, Kilgrave is a grade A psychopath with absolutely no remorse for his actions. And he too has been drifting rather aimlessly through his life. But after meeting Jessica Jones, he decides that he has found his true passion. Not a good mixture of circumstances here, certainly. Kilgrave comes to find out that Jessica is much more than he bargained for, though, and not the sweet girl that she likely seemed to be, but a strong, I would say damaged and willful woman who loves her adopted sister and best friend fiercely, and after her experience with Kilgrave, is bound and determined to stop him from ever harming anyone again. Kilgrave, of course, goes back to his wicked ways, surprise, surprise, after Jessica leaves and kidnaps a young girl, seemingly innocent, with a core of hidden strength and potential. Gosh, does that sound familiar to you? Just like Jessica. And, of course, she sees the similarities too, and this pushes her over the edge. With the help of her adopted sister slash best friend, Trish, and a morally ambiguous cop, as well as a few other kind of damaged goods friends and neighbors, some of whom who have actually been personally affected and targeted by Kilgrave, Jessica embarks on a journey that will test her will and push her to the brink. Her mission is to stop Kilgrave at all costs before he can strike again. The reasons to watch, of course, aside from David Tennant playing Kilgrave, which you can tell I'm already excited about, and I've already said so much about already, but other reasons to watch are obviously the great acting by all of the actors in the show, but especially David Tennant, as I said, as Kilgrave. Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones, superhero, rape and abuse survivor, general badass, private eye, and owner and operator of Alias Investigations. Mike Coulter as Luke Cage, Jessica's love interest and fellow superhero, the unbreakable man, to her super strong, almost able to fly woman. Carrie Ann Moss as Jerry Hogarth, the morally ambiguous, hard-nosed, and really arrogant attorney that contracts with Alias Investigations and semi-willingly plays a part on Team Alias, which is just going to be my catch-all name for the group of individuals who fight against Kilgrave from time to time. So some of these characters are really all for Team Alias, and others just kind of fight like Jerry does from time to time with Jessica Jones. Ika Darvill, of course, is another great reason to watch. You might also recognize him from Doctor Who. He plays Malcolm, the recovering drug addict neighbor and friend of Jessica Jones. Will Travall, too, as Will Simpson, a cop with a dark side and a deeply buried heart of gold who was targeted by Kilgrave and will stop at nothing to get revenge and keep Trish, his love interest on the show, safe and part of Team Alias as well. Erin Moriarty as the wonderfully cast, and I mean wonderfully cast, Hope Schlottman, who is the survivor of a kidnapping by Kilgrave. And of course, you've got Rachel Taylor as Trish, Jessica's best friend slash adopted sister, and former child star and current radio talk show host. You've got Kieran Mulcair and Colby Minifee, who are also quite good actors, as Jessica's quirky upstairs neighbors, Robin and Ruben, for really the only outright, I would say, comic relief in this dark, really noirish show. It is kind of cool. It's very Sam Spade-like. I really enjoyed it. Very noirish. Of course, all of the characters in Jessica Jones show depth of some, of some sort. Some of them are deeper than others, but we really get to see inside of the characters' motivations. It's almost like as if we're, it's a little voyeuristic, like we get to see too much, but it's kind of a big part of what makes the show so great and so eminently watchable. We get to learn a bit more about their motivations as season one proceeds. And you can watch this all in one sitting, if you dare, on Netflix. I think there are 13 episodes altogether, if I'm not mistaken. Possibly 12, but I think 13. Of course, the next reason to watch is, after the acting, is that the writing is fantastic. Really fantastic. There are a lot of snappy one-liners and quippy yet somehow deep dialogue, and they work. They work about as well here as they do on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Again, Buffy is influencing these shows. Angel is influencing these shows that are out today. But they work really well, just like they did on Buffy, and just like they did on Angel, and just like they do now on Teen Wolf. So I kind of like that we're rolling with this trend nowadays of the Buffy-esque and Angel-esque dialogue, the quippy one-liners, the quirky dialogue. It's very powerful. And it shows that the show can actually be comedic and not take itself totally seriously, which is also very beneficial, I think, when you're making a darker show like this. It does have a sense of humor about it. And just with the level of talent with the actors and the writing team, I think that this just works so well together. It's just gold. It really is. Of course, another good reason to watch is Hope Schlettman's father, who says to Jessica, and this is, look at this great line here, "Looks like you stripped your screws." Now, Jessica says to Hope's father, "Wouldn't be the first time." I mean, how adorable is that? Very Buffy-esque. "Looks like you stripped your screws. Wouldn't be the first time." Now, Trish to Jessica, "Would you put day drinking under experience or special abilities?" Quippy, right? Cute little one-liners. Jessica says to Luke Cage, "I don't flirt. I just say what I want." Jessica's inner monologue at the very end of the last episode of season one. They say, "Everyone's born a hero, but if you let it, life will push you over the line until you're the villain. Problem is, you don't always know that you've crossed that line. Maybe it's enough that the world thinks I'm a hero." It's a short little monologue, but it's very introspective, very to the point, and yes, very not quippy, but just quirky, and it really works. Jessica says to a police detective in response to a Kilgrave attack, "God didn't do this, the devil did, and I'm going to find him." I mean, how powerful is that writing? Another character says to Jessica Jones, "You're coming across as paranoid." Jessica says, "Everyone keeps saying that. It's like a conspiracy." Jessica says to her upstairs neighbors, "I don't give a bag of dicks what kind of kinky shit you're into. Just be into it quietly." Jessica says to a would-be attacker, "You shoot at me, I'll pull the bullet out of my ruined jacket and shove it up your ass with my pinky finger. And who do you think that's going to hurt more?" Malcolm says to Jessica, "You use silence to distance people." Jessica says to Malcolm, "And yet you're still here." Jessica says to a group of peers, "You think you're the only ones who've lost people? You think you're the only ones with pain? You think you can take your shit and dump it on me? You don't get to do that. So take your goddamn pain and you live with it, assholes." Probably something we've all wanted to say to many people over the years. But the dialogue is, it goes from quippy to quirky to powerful to just kind of gut-punching to empowering, to like saying something that we've all wanted to say to people. And it always works. It never seems out of place. It never seems overdone. It never seems silly or underdone. It all seems like it fits so well together. Of course, another great reason to watch is the tone and the general feeling of the show. This is a TV show with a very noirish theme and a dark look to it, tonally. You can literally feel that desperation. You can also feel the hope, though, which, by the way, is the incredibly apt name of one of the show's main characters, which brings us to the great symbolism and metaphor that the show employs. Kilgrave is Jessica's dark side, and Jessica is Kilgrave's light and salvation and ultimately his damnation. Luke Cage and Jessica are equals in the truest sense of the word. But yet at the very beginning of the show, they couldn't be more distant. They couldn't be more unaware. They couldn't be more shut off to each other. They encourage each other to be better, though, as the show goes on in every possible way. This is a theme that is also very rarely seen on TV, at least a theme that's very rarely well done and that plays out well on TV. Jessica Jones, as a show, employs colors in the most artistically poignant ways. I feel that the colors that this show allows to be used are used very sparingly with a very light hand. For instance, the fuchsia color that you might be familiar with if you've read the comic books that they use for Kilgrave, it's a very light-handed use, very lightly used, and it's used to indicate changing tonal aspects of the show's mood as Kilgrave moves in and out of the plot on the show. Night falls the first few times Jessica encounters Luke, who at first I think represents her guilt as well as her desire and as well as her potential. Once she works through some of the issues keeping her from genuinely connecting with him, you'll notice that Jessica and Luke interact in the light as well as in the darkness. Always confident, Trisha's home is brightly lit. It's always pleasantly decorated, whereas Jessica's is dim and musty and icky with little, if any, evidence of housekeeping of any kind. Small things like these, I think, really add up to the overall tone of the show, and I think they deepen the viewer's experience. This show, in my opinion, truly reinvents the superhero genre on TV. Jessica Jones, excuse me, allergies. I do apologize. I do think Jessica Jones just throws away everything silly and cheesy about the superhero genre and about television. Its plot lines are understandably heavy, but they're tight. But even the heaviest of narratives really feel light in the deft hands of the awesome, fantastic, amazing writers, the cinematographers, the editors, the directors, the producers. I mean, they're a great team. They work really tightly together. Jessica Jones is dark, it's sarcastic, as I said before, it's quippy, and it seems to kind of exist somewhere between the worlds of ordinary people, superheroes, and supervillains. This balancing act is done so seamlessly by the entire team that it seems completely effortless when it's viewed as a whole. It's probably painstakingly intentional, but it seems so effortless. The one-liners and the sarcastic quips in Jessica Jones seem totally necessary to the show, too. Unlike some of the clunkier lines that superheroes and movies and other TV shows seemingly force their characters to utter as they're kicking enemy ass and taking names, lines like those detract from the TV shows and movies that they're a part of, whereas the lines in Jessica Jones seem perfectly timed and perfectly placed. As in The 100, Jessica Jones takes familiar tropes and turns them on their ear. And I think that it breaks new ground as it goes along. The strong woman is also flawed, really, in this show. As a strong man is also weak. The villain is also a hero. But as soon as these archetypes are inverted, they flip back around again. They leave the viewer wondering which way is up, which is pretty great, I would say. This show is just, I would really say that this show is all at once unapologetically real and a place that the viewer can go to escape their daily life and just suspend their disbelief, which is a really, really great, seemingly effortless, but probably painstakingly put together a combination. So if you have anything you'd like to add, please do call in to our guest line at 929-477-2694, or feel free to leave us comments in the comments section. Join us for a chat later on. We'll have our chat window open like it's 2001. Okay, that's all I'm saying. So we'll be here to chat with you. Feel free to throw us some info, throw us some lines, and we'll hit you back. So those, I think, are very powerful reasons, and those are the reasons that I have and that many of the people that I've spoken with before drawing up the parameters for this episode have for watching Jessica Jones and for wanting you to watch it. Now moving on to Teen Wolf. Some of the reasons to watch Teen Wolf are the diversity in casting, the great ensemble show. I mean, this is another amazing, amazing example of an ensemble show that really works. The fact that all, as I talked about with the 100, all deaths that occur in this show are poignant, are weighted, and they're not all simply used as tools to move the plot forward. For instance, a certain member of the Argent family springs to mind here. No spoilers, okay, there are quite a few Argents for those of you who have not seen the show. Another reason to watch Teen Wolf is the characters that are present. Characters who've been written out of the show, too. Now, I love this. Characters that have been written out of the show for the time being are often slated to return, and the returns are always successful and they're always poignant. I like that they don't feel the need to just drop an actor from the show because there's a scheduling conflict or, you know, because of writing issues. I feel like they'll keep these characters just in their back pocket, and they don't bring them out just to rally the viewers and say, oh, come watch this new episode. They bring them out at the right time and in the right way, and it always seems to work. Every time they do this, I'm surprised at how well it works. A major character came back this season. One of the Argents came back this season, and you see this person just standing there looking like they're about to kick ass and take names. And the way that it's introduced, it works. It works so incredibly well. I'm really astonished at how good the showrunners are at doing this. I really am. I've got to give them credit for that. Also, and this is kind of a big thing in today's modern acting world, the actors actually seem very humble, and they seem to actually know what's going on with their characters and in the show in general. And they seem to get along really well outside of work and, of course, within the bounds of work as well. I recall a story that I heard of somewhere in an interview, I think, with Tyler Hoechlin for season 4, maybe season 4 part 2, where he spoke of himself, Tyler Posey, and Dylan O'Brien living together when the show started. It's obvious that these three are friends and have remained so throughout the duration of the show. I think that's, again, that's pretty darn cool. That's pretty awesome. And it speaks to the connectedness of those who are on the show. It speaks to the connectedness of the actors. And it just speaks to them being really generally good people. Another thing that's really cool about this show is that since it really is technically an ensemble show, there is sort of an ensemble gang of good guys, i.e. the Pack, and an ensemble gang of bad guys, i.e. the Argents, at least at the outset of the show, Theo's Pack / gang. I almost don't want to call them a legitimate Pack now, but that's, I digress. Now, Deucalion's Pack in season 2, and Deucalion is, of course, back now. The Dread Doctors over the last, season and a half arc. So these are all good examples, I think, of how the show is an ensemble show. And it's interesting how they break the ensemble down into an ensemble gang of good guys and an ensemble gang of bad guys, an ensemble gang of white hats and an ensemble gang of black hats. I think that is just so neat. I don't think I've ever really seen that in a TV show, at least not in a way that works so well. I like the diversity here as well. We've got gay, straight, young, old, differently abled. Allison's grandpa, at least for part of the show, springs to mind, not to mention the differing supernatural ability levels of the main characters. You've got Styles, you've got the sheriff, you've got Melissa, who have no supernatural abilities whatsoever. And then you've got the pack, Meredith, Peter, Derek, and many, many, many others who are on sort of a sliding scale, I guess you would say, of supernatural ability. Now, I also like that this show has a heart. Well, we never stray far from the core concepts and the core principles of the show, no matter how long it has run for, which is very rare, especially in shows so heavily based around universe building as this one is, and building its own mythology. Some of the core themes and principles of this show, I believe, and you can add to them, feel free to add to them. We are talking right now about Teen Wolf, and if you'd like to call in and discuss, you can call us at 929-477-2694. That is 929-477-2694, and discuss it on the air live with us. But some of the core themes here, as I started to say, some of the core principles of the show are family, the family that you're born with and the family you choose, loyalty to your loved ones, fighting your inner demons, embracing strength, making the right choices, even embracing weakness, I would say, in a healthy way. Even as far as making the right choices, we're talking about making the right choices even when doing the right thing and making the right choices is hard. And it doesn't come across in a kind of 90s, the more you know way, in an after school specialty way. It comes across in a very genuine way, which I really like. Not trying to be someone you're not. I think that's a good theme. And it's an all-running theme that's really extended through the entire show. I liked these themes never quit. They never go away. They're never discarded. They're always present. The fact that protecting your loved ones is noble, but not at the cost of truth. You don't take the choices of the people you love away simply because you're worried that they might get hurt, or simply because you're worried that they might leave you. Of course, then correspondingly, there's the principle of sacrifice, even when it's the ultimate sacrifice. That sacrifice is worth it when it's necessary. There's the principle of unconditional love. Open-mindedness, not being prejudicial or condemning those around us for making different choices and or taking different actions, different paths than we might have chosen to do ourselves. There's the principle of ending relationships when things no longer work. Of course, being honest with ourselves and others, that goes hand in hand with ending relationships when things no longer work. There is doing what's right without expectation of reward, knowing ourselves truly and deeply and fully, and sort of staying with ourselves on the journey of life, loving ourselves, caring about that which is greater than and that which is beyond ourselves. In the case of the pack, and in the case of the main characters on Teen Wolf, they care particularly about their loved ones, their families, their pack, and protecting their town and those in it. They're always doing their very best to make Beacon Hills a safe place to live, especially for the innocent and the supernaturally uninitiated, but really for everyone, without expectation of reward, and without these people even knowing that they're being protected and who's doing the protecting and how much they're doing and how much they're giving up and how much they're investing. So as I said, it's truly without expectation of reward at all. Another thing I like about the show are the hidden nods and the Easter eggs. One of the first couple episodes, I believe it was the second episode of season 5B, included a clever nod to Teen Wolf's 1980s movie roots. When Melissa McCall referred to Hill Valley, she referenced Hill Valley, the town that Marty McFly hailed from back in the Back to the Future movie. Yeah, another popular Michael J. Fox movie of the 1980s. By suggesting to a paramedic that patients being evacuated from the Beacon Hills Hospital be taken to the Hill Valley Hospital. Very clever, very cute, very ingenious, really. And for those of you who don't know, of course, Michael J. Fox was in Teen Wolf. He played Scott in Teen Wolf in the 1980s in the original movie version. And so that was a cute reference. Really, really clever. In fact, there are so many clever meta references and so many clever throwbacks within Teen Wolf that there is a whole Tumblr dedicated to them, which brings me to my next point, the clever writing. This show is easily comparable to Buffy the Vampire Slayer with its meta references, its universe building, its moral compass, its dark theme with bits of totally inappropriate and innately awesome gallows humor and lighthearted self-reflection thrown in too. It's quippy dialogue, it's clever one-liners, and just so much more. Not to mention the fact that, like Teen Wolf, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was also a show based on a super cheesy movie that was made in the early 1990s. So, of course, the Teen Wolf movie was made in the late 1980s. There's not too much difference. As far as the style of movie making and the relative popularity of the cheese in the 1980s and 90s, times, let's just say, hadn't changed much between the making of the two movies. Of course, both Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Teen Wolf were both wildly successful despite their cheesy, stinky movie counterparts. Much more so, I dare say, as TV shows and pretty well, you know, as TV shows is what I meant to say. And as you know, the movies were very, very widely panned by critics. And for those of you who are younger or who just weren't paying attention or didn't realize that Buffy and Teen Wolf were both based on really stinky, cheesy movies, you know, it might be worth it to look back and actually take a gander and take a view of both of those movies. You will see exactly what I'm talking about. The cheese factor is off the chain. It's absolutely hilarious in an intentional way. It's just ridiculous. And I think it's absolutely worth taking a look and taking a gander and going back and revisiting that or visiting it for the first time. You probably won't want to visit them again after you have done so once. We will put it to you that way, okay? But you'll see why these movies are so widely panned and why it's such a triumph that their TV show counterparts are, well, pretty well adored by critics and fans alike. Also, a very, I think, good reason to watch and a very interesting comparison is between the Pack and Buffy's Scooby Gang. They're very similar. It's obvious that Teen Wolf has drawn on a lot of the areas that I think made Buffy the Vampire Slayer so successful. The female characters are just as dynamic, just as strong, and just as kick-ass as the male characters are on Teen Wolf. And again, something that worked very well for Buffy and that could well have been drawn on by the makers of Teen Wolf after seeing how successful the Buffy franchise was and what a big deal the strong female characters were. Females most certainly are not damsels in distress on Teen Wolf. Most certainly not. Certainly not. Characters can always develop and change. Case in point, and I won't go into spoilers here, but for those of you who have not seen the entire show, but case in point, characters can always change and develop. Like Allison, Allison's dad, aunt, and grandfather, Isaac, Jackson, Lydia, Liam, the twins, Danny, gosh, so many more. Oh, Lydia's mom, the sheriff. I mean, the list is ongoing. Derek, it's Scott. It's just incredible. I just love it. I think this keeps people hooked. It keeps the viewers hooked. It's just fantastic. I think that's one of the more successful aspects of this show now that I really look at it. All adults, too, in this show, and I like this, all adults aren't portrayed as clueless, helpless, or authoritarian figures that are just there to stymie the characters as they try to move through the various plot points. And I actually think this is something that Teen Wolf does better than Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Because in Buffy, you'll notice that a lot of the adult and authority figures were simply there. They were simply there, and I hate to say this about this wonderful show, but they were simply there to stand in the way of the Scoobies figuring out who the big bad was and taking off the mask and, you know, doing what Scoobies do. Like, the whole show could have been done in 15 minutes if there weren't, you know, scary adults to stand in the way and block the plot from progressing. I think the Teen Wolf handles this much better because, as I said, all the adults aren't portrayed as clueless, helpless, or ridiculously old, nor are they played off as one-dimensional authority figures or, as I said, plot points. All Teen Wolf characters are rich, they're well-developed, and they're deep, period. End of sentence. Moving on. Characters of all ages interact and work together to help or hurt, as the case may be, each other. There's a beautiful, simple, and brilliant, brilliant dichotomy played out between Scott and Deucalion. Deucalion and Scott are mirror images of each other. Scott is honorable, trustworthy, open, honest, self-sacrificing, and kind, whereas Deucalion, took a little water break there, whereas Deucalion is literally blind to the harm that he causes others, even his own pack, as you may recall from season 2. Of course, tonally, the show is dark, but lightness and color are used beautifully too. I think that there's a little bit of a comparison to be had between Teen Wolf and Jessica Jones in this regard. Tonally, the show is dark, but as I said, the lightness and the color are used beautifully and somewhat sparingly. There is such a stark difference between scenes filmed in the dark and scenes filmed in the light. Oftentimes when the pack are interacting as normal kids or normal citizens, they're seen in scenes that are light. And when they're functioning within the supernatural world as heroes and or supernatural beings, such scenes are filmed darkly. I love that the pack is a fluid thing, too, in this show. The Scooby Gang in Buffy wasn't such, I mean, it was fluid, like Oz, Tara, you know, Dawn, Riley, Angel, Spike, but still the core gang was always Willow, Buffy, Xander, and Giles, always. Now, I mean, that never changed. I don't know that it should have, but I do like that in Teen Wolf, the pack is a fluid thing. The pack isn't just some clique of high school kids either, who is opposed to allowing any new members to join the pack. Members come and go and come back again, as I mentioned before. And there are kids and adults within the pack alike. Mr. Argent, for one, as far as examples of adults within the pack or that function within the pack when necessary. Mr. Argent, Dr. Deaton, Derek, sometimes Peter, though obviously Peter's intentions and motives were always dubious. But I just feel that this is a good thing. It shows that the adults are not always just simple plot points or simple breaks in the script to keep the plot from moving along too quickly and smoothly. I really like the way that the adults and the kids function together. I really like the diversity. I really like the dichotomy between Deucalion and Scott. I really just very much enjoy all of the ways that Teen Wolf has played off of Buffy and Angel and Alias and some of the really big shows of that era. But I also like how they've diverted and how they've moved away from them in the correct ways as well. And I think this is really important. I enjoy, and I believe I mentioned this earlier, but I really enjoyed the fact that when a new character comes into the show, and God forbid, when a new character replaces an old one within the pack, I mean, it feels right somehow. It just feels right. There's no silliness. There's no controversy. There's no contrived effort to just fit everybody into a specific mold. I mean, it's really wonderful. I particularly enjoy that. And I think it is absolutely awesome. So that's about all I've got right now. And we are on a timed show tonight, so we've got a little bit of extra time to talk. I don't think I want to just end the show. We've got a little bit of time to talk, a few minutes here. So I'd like to leave it to you if anybody has anything to add. If anybody would like to call in and join us, I certainly would love to hear from you. You can call in at 929-477-2694. We are going to be setting up a chat. In fact, we'll just go ahead and do that right now. I do feel like I'm living in 2001 when I say that. I'll tell you, I do. I mean, like, launch chat room, what is that about? I feel like I'm doing like an IRC chat or something. Is that weird? So, truly, if you'd like to join our chat room, feel free to join us in 2002. In our chat room. And apparently we need to log back in to do this. This website sure is, you know, it just wants to keep things exciting. The website that is Black Talk Radio and the Gigya website, it just wants to shake things up and keep you on your toes and keep things exciting. So we're in the midst of opening up the public chat, the public 1999/2000 IRC chat, and I believe that was successful. Let us see. So if anybody would like to join us for our chat, please do feel free. I would absolutely love to do that. It just comes to my mind that we may have had some callers that were missed. That doesn't make me very happy. That doesn't make me very happy because I obviously pay for this channel and for this medium. And I want to let you know that if you did call in and you didn't get through, now is the time. Please call back. I do apologize for that. It looks like we've had a couple of callers, and it simply didn't register on my screen. It didn't come up. I do want to apologize, and I do want to open the floor to you and let you know that right now, if you would like to call and talk about Teen Wolf, or if you'd like to call and talk about The 100 or Jessica Jones, please call us at 929-477-2694. That is 929-477-2694. And I do apologize for the technical issue that we were experiencing. It is not good that we apparently had callers that were not taken. So I'd like to leave this time, this final 15 minutes, open to you. Please call in. Let's discuss. I know that we had a lot of people who were really excited to talk about Teen Wolf and Jessica Jones. So please do feel free to do that. I would be more than happy to do that with you right now at 929-477-2694. And, of course, you can join us in our 1999-2000 IRC chat room. Just, you know, get in your DeLorean and travel back in time. And apparently we do have a guest here right now. Welcome in our chat room. So if you'd like to talk about these shows, please call us at 929-477-2694. And for anybody who's just tuning in, the shows we're discussing tonight, we're actually starting a brand new segment / series of episodes. It's going to be called Best in Show. Well, it is called Best in Show because it's on right now. It's happening. It's called Best in Show, and it features the best television shows out there. And, of course, when I say television shows, I'm not just referring to shows that are only on cable television. I'm referring to Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, anything, HBO, Showtime, regular channels. I'm talking about all shows. And right now we're talking specifically about three shows, Teen Wolf, Jessica Jones, and The 100. Now these shows are on TV today. They're on now. Of course, we will be covering shows in future episodes that have been on in the past that are no longer on the air. To call in and talk about the shows we're discussing tonight, Jessica Jones and The 100, please give us a call at 929-477-2694. We do see that we have missed a few guest calls. Not of our doing. It's simply, we're having some problems with the website, and I want to extend my apologies for that. I know we had some eager callers and people who were eager to talk, and I do apologize for that profusely. Please do call us back at 929-477-2694. And if you missed that number, you can just click on the link on Facebook or on Blog Talk Radio or Twitter that I provided. And it will take you right here, and it will give you the number to call in, which is, again, 929-477-2694. So although tonight we are talking about and have talked about Teen Wolf, Jessica Jones, and The 100, in the future, we as I said, will be discussing shows that have been on the air previously but are no longer on the air now. A couple of those shows will include, or those discussions, rather, will include Star Trek, Star Trek The Next Generation, Doctor Who, New Who, and Classic Who. And we will be talking, of course, about, as you can tell, one of my favorites, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, an Angel, Alias. So we'll be discussing some great shows of the past and some great shows of the modern age. It'd be great if we could talk about shows in the future, but we just do not have that technology yet. As I said, like, you know, get in your DeLorean if you have one and meet us in 1999, where we're apparently simultaneously talking in an IRC chat room. And if your DeLorean has extra coffee grounds and vegetable oil, you can just fly on into the future and then come back and let me know what shows are kicking ass in, say, 2020, and we'll get a jump on things. But until then, we're going to discuss shows of great shows of the past and great shows that are currently on the air now or online on Netflix and Hulu. Jessica Jones is, as I said, a Netflix show. For those of you who have not seen Jessica Jones, and for those of you who maybe don't have the patience to wait for a week-in, week-out show, an episodic show like that, you can actually watch all of Jessica Jones right now on Netflix. Now, there's been some talk about Daredevil versus Jessica Jones, and I know that there is a little bit of a camp that sort of prefers Daredevil over Jessica Jones. I have to tell you, personally, I am firmly, firmly placed in the Jessica Jones camp. I was just incredibly disappointed with Daredevil. I thought the acting was horrendous. I thought that the, I guess you would call them special effects, were kind of pathetic. I thought that the costume was absolutely silly and presented way too late in the game. I thought that the premise really wasn't that good. I mean, I don't love the comic to begin with, but they didn't do anything to spruce it up. The character relationships were wooden. The storyline was contrived and obvious, and it just did. There was no urgency to it. Okay, he's defeating a slumlord. Great. Who cares? Like, there was no, I mean, even the great actor, the great, great, great actor, Vincent D'Onofrio, who played the villain in Daredevil, was just kind of canned and wooden and one-dimensional. I was very, very sad to see that. I really wanted to love Daredevil, but I didn't. Also, we've got the wonderful, you know, Jessica N. Wall from True Blood. She seemed very one-dimensional as well, and she's a really good actor. So, yeah, that was so disappointing to me. So if you're wondering which camp I'm in, whether it's Daredevil or Jessica Jones, now you know. I'm definitely in the Jessica Jones camp. Very disappointed with Daredevil. Maybe it'll pick up in season two. Who knows? I am extremely impressed with Jessica Jones, though, and I am so excited to see what happens in season two. Apparently, and believe me, I'm not giving away spoilers right now, but apparently we're not sure if David Tennant's going to be back. And not because of just like a plot issue, but I guess because of scheduling issues and because he's still doing, what is it, Grace Point? Not Broadchurch, but Grace Point, the American version of Broadchurch. So he's really not super available. So I'm hoping to see him back in season two. I'm really hoping and praying for that because I think he was a great, great part of season one. And of course, for those of you who haven't seen Jessica Jones, I'm hoping you've seen Doctor Who. If you haven't, I hope to introduce you to David Tennant very soon by talking about Doctor Who a little bit and introducing you to what, you know, why the heck this guy is so popular and famous. And that really is all Doctor Who is doing. He was a great doctor, a great doctor. Not that I want to get too far into the Doctor Who storyline right now, because that's not the topic at hand, but I think he was one of the best, if not the best, doctor in the entire series of Doctor Who, the classic and the new Who. And of course, it follows that he would then be, you know, the greatest villain that the Marvel universe has ever seen. And I don't think I am overstating. I mean, we've got some really kind of wooden villains, and we've got some really well-acted wooden villains, like, unfortunately, Loki from the Avengers. I am just crapping all over everybody's fandoms tonight. I apologize. Supernatural, boom, right there. Crapped on that already. Done. Flush. Yeah, crapped on Daredevil for you. You're welcome. Just crapped on the Avengers for you. Anytime, sure, you're welcome. I do apologize for that, though. That was not my intention, but I'm just trying to let you know why I think David Tennant is so great in Jessica Jones. I think that he is just imminently watchable. He is just so good, and as I said, he just rapes and murders and maims his way into the viewer's heart, which is so incredibly tough to do. I mean, he is just fantastic. And speaking of great villains, I think I'm really excited to see Deucalion back in Teen Wolf. I mean, this is exciting stuff. No joke, this is exciting stuff. I have been personally, and I know a lot of other people have been too, wanting to see this guy come back for several seasons. And in fact, interestingly enough, the guy who plays Deucalion was actually in Daredevil. He played a low-level sort of henchman of Vincent D'Onofrio's bad guy. I apologize, I can't remember the character's name right now. I'm probably blocking it from my mind because it was so horrible. But in Daredevil, so Deucalion is actually tied in to Daredevil, unfortunately. So, you know, I'm really excited to see him back. I was just ecstatic to see him back. You know who else I'd like to see back on Teen Wolf? And you guys let me know what you think about this in the comments section and on our IRC chat forum from 2002, of course, right now. So I'm really excited to hopefully one day see Peter Hale come back on Teen Wolf too. I know that the way that they left things off without throwing too many spoilers out there was ambiguous at best, but I would really love to see him back on the show. So let us know what villains and what heroes and what characters you'd like to see back on Teen Wolf. I bet that we'll get a lot of Isaacs, a lot of Peters, of course, a lot of Derricks, and a lot of Allisons, actually. Yeah. So, and please don't feel that I'm only mentioning characters who have been killed off. I'm not. Some of these actors left the show for scheduling reasons. Others were written out, but not permanently. So again, I'm not giving you any spoilers. Don't freak out if you haven't watched up until the most recent episodes of Teen Wolf. But I think if you haven't watched the most recent episodes, you should do yourself a favor and go ahead and watch. Nothing to lose. I think you'll enjoy yourself. And I also think that those of you who have not watched any of these shows should go ahead and watch them. Teen Wolf, Jessica Jones, and The 100. Teen Wolf, I believe, is a little bit trickier to find as far as the older episodes are concerned. If I'm not mistaken, and please don't quote me on this, I believe it used to be on Hulu. It no longer is. It is, I believe it's exclusively on Amazon Prime. So it may or may not, they may or may not have some episodes on Netflix or something. All I know is that they definitely have all of the episodes on Amazon Instant Video, which you have to have Amazon Prime to have. So if you're willing to invest the money to get a hold of these episodes, great. If not, we won't fault you for that. You can go ahead and wait till they come back out on a free or cheaper platform. But for now, I believe they're exclusively available through Amazon Prime Instant Video, and you will have to pay for them. I don't think it's as expensive as iTunes. They're also on iTunes. But, you know, because you have the whole membership going on with the Amazon Prime Instant Video thing. So I say check it out. If you can invest the money, check it out on Amazon Prime. Just go ahead and watch all four seasons and then catch up on the fifth one on your on-demand cable network. And, you know, that might even be on Amazon Prime, too. I would imagine it would be. So you can watch all of the episodes right there. I really encourage you to do that. I think you'll enjoy yourself very much. And in the meantime, watch Jessica Jones and The 100. All of these shows are on and airing right now. And as I mentioned before, Jessica Jones can be watched in its entirety on Netflix. Thank you for joining us tonight, and I do again apologize so profusely for our little technical difficulty. If you did try to call in, please do call back next time. We'll give you some time to talk about these subjects that we discussed tonight and these shows that we discussed tonight on next week's episode. Again, apologies from the bottom of my heart for that. And thank you so much for tuning in to Welcome to My World. Have a great night.